This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're going to talk about Donna Adelson in a moment, but while we're on the closing of that, Eric Faddis joining us, defense attorney, former prosecutor. Let's just talk about that for just a second while we're on it. Obviously, Alec Murdaugh, we're getting closer and closer with the appeal process. You know, another box has been checked and we got to move it this way and that way. Where do you think this is going? Do you think that there is a good chance that Alec Murdaugh may get a retrial based on the issues, especially with Becky Hill?
You know, Tony, anything's possible. Getting a retrial is a pretty high bar. It's mm-hmm. hard to meet that. It rarely happens. However, here with that clerk of court issue, that does present something for the court to consider. And you know, there's allegations that Becky made statements that could have influenced that jury. And if so, you know, we're talking about a murder case and the court's going to take that seriously. So there is at least a prospect that there could be a new trial.
The fact that they've gotten this far with it, I mean, that we're getting, you know, all the boxes are checked this far, and is it odd that an appeal has gone this far down the chain if it didn't have a chance of succeeding?
I think it's an indication as to the potential strength of the appeal. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes these things are almost summarily denied and you know, the defendant might have like a habeas corpus Hail Mary at some point down the road. But here, courts have seriously considered what Murdaugh is alleging. And, you know, he's an attorney. He, at least for a period of time, had a very elite legal team. And so it's I think moving in the direction that Murdaugh might want in terms of the likelihood of a new trial.
Would be very interesting to see if that does happen. We'll, of course, keep following it. Let's move on to Donna Adelson and Wendy. Donna, of course, just convicted of murder, conspiracy, and solicitation of the charges in the Dan Markell case. Almost immediately, her defense team moved for a new trial. This is common. This is normal. You get found guilty, you're going to try and appeal it. Raising claims. Now we're learning of juror misconduct, bias from the judge, and arguments that the evidence itself wasn't strong enough. And they're big, bold allegations on paper, the kind that can sound dramatic if read dramatically to the public. But are they truly game-changing or just the standard playbook of a convicted defendant? Eric, that's what I want to ask you about. As both a defense attorney and former prosecutor, I want your first reaction here. When you saw the grounds laid out for the appeal, what went through your mind initially?
Sure. So as you mentioned, Tony, an appeal, especially in a murder case, is almost automatic. You're going to see it no matter what. When we look at the grounds, you know, sufficiency of evidence, that is usually a very weak ground. Courts almost never overturn cases on that ground. They respect the jury's determination. When it comes to bias of the judge, that can go both ways. The one that stands out a little bit is juror misconduct, as courts have sort of been trending towards giving significant weight to those arguments, so long as the defense can meet the requirements they need to meet. That part is still an open question.
I want to ask you this about juror misconduct. Just, you know, from an attorney standpoint, in a defense attorney standpoint, are we seeing more allegations of juror misconduct today than we would have 5-10 years ago?
I think absolutely, Tony. And this case, the Adelson case, is sort of illustrative on that. What I mean is in their appeal, Adelson cites to social media posts in part from these jurors and also a social media or podcast that one of the jurors did. You know, those things wouldn't be available 10, 20, yeah, 50 years ago. The defense attorney wouldn't even be aware of those things. But now they are combing through sort of the digital footprint of everybody involved, and they've happened upon these grounds that they think are meritorious.
Is that, I mean, that's what I was kind of wondering about and kind of getting to is it because of social media? Is social media wreaking havoc with our justice system now because of all these sort of things?
You know, it's certainly a part of the evolution of our justice system. There is just so much more publicly accessible information that wasn't publicly accessible in the past. And so defense attorneys are jumping on that. They're doing investigative measures that they wouldn't have been able to do 20, 50 years ago. And they're finding little tidbits that they think are problematic and grounds for an appeal. So, yeah, it certainly transformed the way that trials are looked at and the way that appeals are handled.
So, Eric, can we go back for just a second for those of us who are listening and wondering, maybe we've never been in a courtroom, maybe we've never been part of a jury, and you don't have to go into great detail, but can you tell us a summary of what a judge says to the jury about what they do when they go home? You're not supposed to watch the news. You're not supposed to talk to other people. But in regard to social media, what are the instructions typically?
Typically, Stacey, they are something to the effect of, hey, jurors, you can only base your determination on what is said in court. There are usually also restrictions on the jurors being able to talk about their jury service during the trial. Now, after the trial, that changes a little bit. Oftentimes, jurors nearly all of the time, jurors are free to discuss their service if they want, but they don't have to. But during that trial, the judge is very clear that the jury is not supposed to be posting on social media about the case and shouldn't be discussing what's going on in the courtroom when they are outside of that courtroom.
It's really hard in today's world. I mean, people are glued to their devices. They're glued. It's not just sitting in the barber's chair talking to the guy next to you. It's people are in Messenger. I mean, there's all kinds of things, especially if somebody knows you're on this jury. I can't imagine the pressure to say something.
Sure. Yeah. You know, people now with the advent of social media are documenting their lives. They're giving the world a glimpse into their day to day. And if you are on a nationally publicized murder trial as a juror, you're probably going to want to some folks might feel inclined to want to share that. And like you said, it's not sharing it with, you know, your doctor or the barber or something. It's sharing it with the world. And so that really changes the game.
Is that stupidity or is that people having literally no self-control? To me, it doesn't seem like a huge crazy ask to say, put down the phone, maybe stay off social media while we're doing this, children. It's not that hard. It's not like, oh, I can't control a whole picking up this phone.
Yeah, but wait a second, Tony. We have an entire generation of people.
Yeah,
that they don't read anymore. They watch videos. And now you're asking them for 2 to 4 weeks to keep your freaking mouth shut.
Yes. If you'd like to participate in our society, that's what you need to do.
It's so easy to say it.
I think that's how it should be. I'm sick of like all the like, well, let's it's going to be real difficult for, you know, Skippy to do that. It's like tough shit. Grow the fuck up. I don't care if you, yes, you may be inconvenienced in your life. You may feel uncomfortable that you can't see what Susan had for lunch and what her political leanings are this afternoon.
Get off my lawn.
Who fucking cares? Like, go touch some grass. I mean, it's not crazy to say you can't use social media. And if you're going to screw, I mean, but I, it's not crazy to say it. I guess we're finding it's crazy to expect people to have, to exercise the self-control that's requested of them specifically. And then for them to not screw it up. I think that's the bigger problem. With this case, juror number 7 is the one that's being questioned about the TikTok post, and we'll talk about the other juror too. This one is the one that's going on allegedly posting on TikTok during the actual trial, identifying herself as the foreperson. The post has since been deleted, but defense wants to interview her. The allegation is the post said nothing more than that, is that I'm on this trial, I'm the foreperson. Not leaving anything else out there, but again, why? What what self-righteous bullshit is going through this juror's mind that I must let the world know this? Because of course you're going to get comments from your friends and your family about this. And of course they're going to weigh in. And they have every right to. They weren't told by the judge to shut the F up. You were told to, and now you're inviting them to come to you to tell you what you think and to tell everybody what they think so you can all just, and it's exactly the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
Eric, do you think Tony's got some feelings on this?
So it sounds like there are some heated positions on this across the board. And you know, that one concern, what Tony said, the fact that you make this post and people might weigh in on it. People might comment, they might message you. And I think the concern from the defense's side is that what was that feedback? What messages did she get? Did someone reply and say, hey, did you hear about all this stuff from Donna Adelson's past, you know, before the trial, like in the 2000s and stuff like that, which would be information the jury could not consider. So I think that's what the defense is sort of hedging towards, is what were the reactions to this post, and did was that four-person influenced at all by those reactions? If so, could be a problem.
Is this just an uphill battle that is this something where the courts need to just readjust and we as a culture need to readjust our expectations of juries and trials? Is it a bridge too far now to say you can't have to expect people to not follow these rules because they're not going to? I mean, I think if anybody thinks that jurors are truly not going home and watching the news and getting on social media and talking to their friends and family, and the next day when the judge says, did you do any of that? They're all saying, no, we didn't, sir. I mean, realistically, you're an attorney. Do you really think in most cases that those juries are not doing those things every single day when they go home?
Right.
You know, it's a very fair question. I, of course, have concerns, especially on the defense side now, that can be going on, because the risk is that they receive information outside of the court process that they're not supposed to consider. But if that information's in your brain, that bell can't be unrung. And so it could influence how a juror sees this. In terms of expectations, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, hey, you shouldn't post on social media. You shouldn't look up news articles about this, but people do. And
they do.
There's always that concern, especially on the defense side.
So do we just sit there and say, don't do this? And if you do, then maybe we'll deal with it later. Or maybe it'll be an appeal. Maybe it'll be this. Maybe it'll be that. Or do we have to just like start sequestering every jury for every single trial that exists and taking the devices away because the children can't be trusted with their toys?
No, I'm not sure what the solution is, but I can confirm that there is a problem. Here's what I mean. So during the trials, you know, there's no judge's order for the attorneys not to be looking at their phones and searching stuff, doing emails, whatever.
Yeah.
But I just had a homicide case against a very prominent elected DA, and I won't say his name. But during the trial, he's sitting back at his counsel table, just looking at his phone, scrolling across, you know, heaven knows what he's doing. And so if the attorneys can't even refrain from that conduct during the trial as it's going on, can we reasonably expect a juror to not go home in the privacy of their own house and do that? I'm not sure.
Well, remember, I forget the case. It was somebody, a judge who was on Facebook. She was scrolling through Facebook on like the court computer. Tony, I forget which one it is.
I know you're talking about during the actual trial itself.
Yeah, she's sitting there just screwing around on Facebook, and it was a security camera, I think, that picked it up, that somebody looked at it and went, is she on Facebook? And she's the judge sitting there on her throne in her robe on Facebook during a trial.
Totally, Stacey, and I've had similar concerns with judges. Certainly not all of them, but some of them. You know, I'm making an argument, or we're taking testimony in a motions hearing. The judge is on their computer, and sometimes, you know, I might ask a question of the court or something like that, and it seems like the court was distracted with their own computer stuff. Perhaps they're researching case law. I don't know. But
yeah, maybe Wordle was really hard that day, and they're just like, I got to get this word in four guesses, you know? Don't interrupt me.
It's a scary prospect.
I feel like we're discussing more of a societal problem than a court problem. At the end of the day, if no one can exercise even the slightest bit of self-control because we're so addicted to getting that little dopamine hit from our devices, that we cannot function as that is trumping our role as a functioning member of our society.
We're all just a bunch of monkeys.
It goes beyond the court cases. I mean, it goes to everything. I mean, really. At the end of the day.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.